Hi, Mark. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Monique. How are you?
I'm very, very happy that you're here. I am actually very excited because I read your book, and the book, what a great title, Finding My Words, A Ruthless Commitment to Healing Gently After Trauma. I read your book and I was like, this man is articulating how we couldn't articulate our experience with trauma as well as sharing your journey. I just was like, there was so much in there. So I'm so glad that you are here. We're going to talk about your book. We're going to talk about finding your words and why that's so hard after trauma. So first, let me just introduce you. So Dr. Mark M. McNear is a licensed clinical social worker and maintains a private practice in New Jersey. With over 30 years of experience in clinical practice, Dr. McNear now focuses on helping those who've had trauma, abuse, and addictions, sharing the hope of healing that he has realized in his life. And so I love that when someone has experienced so much trauma, they've got that lived peace, and they're trying to help other people because they really get it. It's not just a textbook, they get it. So, welcome. And maybe we could start with that title, which I just love, Finding Your Words. Why did you name the book Finding Your Words?
That's a great question. I think that what I would say first, if I could back up just a little bit and say that it was 9 years ago in July that my dad had passed away. And I think that that opened the door for healing for me. So fast forward to March of 2015, I call my psychiatrist. I ask her for refills. She was very clear that she knew that I was abusing the medications and that I had become addicted to certain medications. And so she very clearly said to me, "You need to go to rehab." And so that was not something that I wanted to hear that day. I just wanted to hear, "Yeah, I'll fill the prescriptions and no problem." But so I sat there and it was kind of like this smack across the face that, I talk about it being probably the worst day of my life in some ways and the best day of my life, because so much freedom has come out of that. So, I said to her I would get on it right away and that I would look for a rehab. And so I waited for my wife Debbie to get home. She teaches school, and so that was a really hard conversation. And I said to her that I needed to go to rehab, told her that I had spoken with the doctor. Debbie was just so grace-filled and just said to me, "I think it's great that you're taking this step." And so then I needed to get in touch with my daughter, and I she was in Florida at the time. I reached out to Emily, told her, and she again was like, "Debbie, so great about it," and said, "I'm so glad you're going for help." And I talk in the book that, everybody knows about the addiction except the addict. And I think that's so true, that I was clueless about it, but everybody else knew that I was struggling with addictions. And so I'm off to, I called colleagues before that, Monique, and I said to them, "What rehab would you recommend?" And it was funny because they thought that I was calling for clients. And I was like, no, this is for me. I had called for clients in the past, but this was for me. And so they had given me a recommendation of somewhere in Pennsylvania. So Debbie drove me, and I was in no shape to drive, and I was going through withdrawal because I had stopped some of the medications after taking them for about 30 years. And so rough week, and it would get rougher. And so I get to rehab, and as the medications are going out of my body, the memories of the trauma come back with a vengeance, and so strongly. And so I'm sitting there and I'm just like in my head, just shaking my head, like, no, because there were things that some of them I hadn't thought about in probably 50 years since the abuse had happened. And so, one of the things in rehab that they encourage you to do is to tell your story. And so I had different counselors and different residents, and they were great about it, but they were encouraging me to tell my story. And Monique, that was the beginning of me realizing I didn't have the words. I had played the abuse over and over and over in my head, but I did not ever speak a lot of the things that happened to me. You know, there was physical abuse, there was sexual abuse, there was verbal abuse and emotional abuse. And a lot of that was from my dad. My mom was an alcoholic, and I talk about these things in the book. But, you know, people would ask me, and I just froze. I didn't have the words, and I couldn't articulate what had happened. And, you know, not even that, but I didn't have the emotional wherewithal to be able to share. You know, I was just so dysregulated emotionally. And so actually one day I woke up when I was in the middle of doing the book, and the title came to me, you know, Finding My Words, and then A Ruthless Commitment to Healing Gently After Trauma. So, you know, I talked to the publisher about that. They loved the title of it, and so we went with the title.
I, you know, when you were speaking and you were saying that you didn't have the words and emotional dysregulation, I had a picture in my head. And you know, those pictures you sometimes see, those images where, you know, if someone's got a lot on their mind, it's just a big, like, it's just a big chaos.
Exactly.
And there's no
Exactly.
words, but it's, we know it's complete distress. And,
And I can remember sitting in rehab, and what made it even worse for me is I was trying to repress them, to push them down, and they were coming up, you know, as trauma memories do. And part of my work in rehab, which I didn't even realize what I was doing, I was trying to push them down, where the healthy thing would have been to let them come up, but I just wasn't ready yet to do that. So little bits came up here and there.
I mean, I think we now understand that so much, that all of these things that we're using, whether it's, you know, prescription drugs or food or shopping or any kind of addiction, is really I think a way to not feel and kind of regulate what's trying to, you know, that this overwhelm.
Absolutely. It's, you know, I use the quote from Gabor Mate, the question isn't why the addiction, the question is why the pain. And that's what this journey has been for me to be able to, as a clinician and as a person and as a very, very traumatized person, for me to watch this process in my own life unfold, and by the grace of God, just allow it to bring about the healing. It's been very painful, but it's been a really good journey for me.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I remember reading in your book that you thought you were just gonna, which is common for some of us at the beginning, you thought you were just gonna go for 4 weeks and then you'd be all better and
Yeah. You know, I would not talk about this with clients. I would not talk about this with anyone. It would just be a quick 4 week fix, and then I'd come home and begin to practice. And you know, it turned out, you know, looking back at it, how naive I was and how much denial I was in. You know, it turned out, Monique, that it would be a 2 year process before I would ever get back to even counseling our team. You know, I had to work through a lot of really tough situations in my mind. And the other thing I had to do, and I talk about it in the book, is I had to go back and look at the damage that I had caused in my own life with the addictions that I had with my wife, with my daughter, with my son-in-law, with others. And so I wanted to do that well. And one of the things that I realized in rehab, I think it was in the big book, that it said, you know, don't go around and tell people that you're not going to relapse, or you're not, you know, you're not going to use again. Show them. And was something that I really, really grabbed onto, and was like, you know what? I'm not going to talk about any of this. I'm not even going to talk about my recovery. I'm just going to do things. I'm going to jump into treatment. I'm going to do things, and heal.
That's a big principle, that whole thing of, you know, show not tell. We're so used to, like, you know, talking things, thinking things, focusing on things, and but really it's the experience of doing something that starts to change us. lot of the somatic stuff that starts to make a difference.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I remember somewhere in my healing journey, Emily, my daughter, saying that she wasn't sure, I was going to be able to be serious about it or get sober, remain clean. And so I was just determined, to just work on myself and to work on the pain, not the addiction so much, but to work on the pain to alleviate the dysregulation in my body that I was feeling and to then show it to my family that way and not to tell them about it.
So I have a question for you. 'Cause you said some of the memories, I think you said some of the memories started to come up, but basically it sounds like you were just trying to just shove everything for so many years. Were you not aware, or was it just something you just like wanted to say, that's behind me and I'm just gonna not.
That's a phenomenal question. Monique, I think that it was both. There were some things that I was aware of, but I would just joke about them, just that it was a crazy story that happened to me. There were other things that I really did not have an awareness of. The sexual abuse and the extent of the sexual abuse was repressed. I did not have those memories for years. And so sitting in and just having them start to come out, I was just like trying to act normal, sitting there among other residents and trying to act normal, but just having this flood of memories of when I was 4, 5, 6 years old and the things that happened, really, really painful.
I wanted to just stop there for a minute because I mean, people who have had that lived experience of having no memory of abuse, of sexual abuse, and then it coming up later in life. And in the 90s there was this whole thing about false memory syndrome. And
Memories, yeah.
and yes, there was maybe a little bit of truth to some
Absolutely.
stories, but for the most part, I think that there was a lot of people whose experiences just got dismissed. And I have met time and time again, I've heard time and time again, I can't even begin to tell you how many people have had memories come up in their 30s, 40s, 50s. And it makes sense because if something is so painful or difficult, we don't want to feel it, that it may come up later when there is a little bit of stability, or maybe there isn't stability, I don't know. In your case, it started to come up when the drugs started being removed and you
Yeah,
were.
I think, I think there were two things. I think number one, my dad had passed away, and my dad sexually abused me, and so kind of like the coast was clear. And then the other thing is the medications were going out of my system. So the combination of those things, there were things that, like I said, I had not thought about and I had put away for 51 years. And so, I can remember sitting in rehab and going like, oh no, that did happen. And there was this like kind of connection between that 4-year-old and the 55-year-old guy saying, you know what, that really did happen. And I put that away. And I talk about it in the book that some of the things that happened to me were pretty horrendous. And so I vowed that I would never talk about them ever. And so, I'm sitting in rehab and people are saying, share your story. And I'm listening to other people's stories, and there was a lot of trauma in their stories, understandably, but I knew my story was so much different and just didn't feel safe at that point to talk about it.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I was reading that in your story, and hopefully professionals understand that, there needs to be a sense of safety and time before someone feels right or safe enough to begin to even start to put words around their experiences, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I wanted to be authentic and I wanted to be vulnerable as a professional. And I wanted to put it out there for different people, in the professional field, for clients, for families. My passion is within the church. And so I wanted to be real and to say, you know what? These are the things that I went through, these were the struggles, and I'm somebody who really struggled with these things, and I am still struggling today, and that's okay because I'm healing, and that's the journey that I'm on. And so I wanted to kind of balance, being a professional and then also being a quote unquote patient, or a client and say, you know, this is what it's like. And, you know, I talk about some things that were hard to talk about. I talk about, you know, being in rehab and getting up the one morning and having all of these memories just flooding back, Monique, and then standing at the bathroom sink and having a panic attack and just being like sitting on the bed and just taking deep breaths and going like, I got to get through this. I got to get to breakfast. You know, so I wanted to be real. I wanted to be vulnerable. I wanted to say, you know what, whether you've had tons of training or whether you have had no training, you know, people struggle when they've had trauma. And I didn't want to wrap the book up at the end and make it like I'm doing wonderful now. You know, I wanted to say, you know what, it's a daily struggle with different things. And I have a great life. I have a great relationship with my wife and with my daughter, Emily. Debbie and I have a great relationship. Emily and I have a great relationship. Brandon, my son-in-law. And I wanted to be able to talk about that. But I also wanted to be real and say, yeah, I struggle with anxiety. I struggle with depression. I struggle big time with flashbacks, not as much as I used to, but I still have them. And they're really painful, but it's not a sign that I haven't, you know, really healed a lot. And in fact, some of the flashbacks are an indication of how much I have healed.
How so?
I think I know that's an odd statement. I think it's because, you know, you talked about the idea of safety. So I think that I'm safe now to let them come up, these memories and these flashbacks to come up. And so flashbacks that I'm having today are different than flashbacks that I had a few years ago. In some ways, they're more painful, and in some ways, they are much more vivid of the sexual abuse. But it's kind of like my brain has the permission now to release those things because there's no danger.
I think that's what I really appreciated about your book, because I think we could all smell BS when someone's talking about, whether it's talking about their story and how they've healed, we can smell.
Definitely.
And I, you know, a lot of us just, we can't tolerate that, you know? So I love that you say, yes, I have healed. Yes, it's been hard and it still is hard. And I'm experiencing some joy. I have a life that has good relationships and I'm still healing. And I think that's the thing we really want to want people to understand, I think, is that when you've had complex trauma, I mean, we've had trauma from the get-go. Our brain learned early that life is da people are dangerous. Life is dangerous. No wonder why we're anxious. Our bodies have sort of been tuned that way, shaped that way. And as we know, part of healing is the reshaping and the re-experiencing safe relationships, safe experiences, disconfirming experiences. But all of that is a journey and a process, and it's like it's messy.
That idea of renewing our minds, changing our minds, you know, that idea, Monique, I think back when you talk about anxiety, I have had so much anxiety, and I can remember getting out of rehab, and I could remember actual periods when I didn't have the anxiety in my body, and that would kick on anxiety, and I'd become anxious about not being anxious because it was so unusual for me. And then it's like, uh-oh, I'm not on guard. I need to go back to being on
Of
guard.
course,
No,
of
I still
course.
do. Yeah,
Oh
absolutely.
yeah, because that again, our brains are, you know, God designed us so that we could be safe. And if your body is suddenly like relaxing, there's this part of you that's like, wait a minute, this is not how it goes. How it goes from our past experiences is that it's not safe to be like this because anything can, a bomb can go off anytime. So better get back into self-protection. I mean, that's all part of our design. And I heard you mention this too. You mentioned that it is a re, I wrote it down because it was so good, repetition. And I was like, yes, there's that repetition of safety and safe experiences that have to happen for the brain and the body to begin to relax a little bit. Well, what do you have to say about that?
You know, I think that I'm still in that process.
Me too.
I think for me, with having complex trauma and having anxiety and depression, I have a lot of emotional dysregulation, and I think that's one of the hallmarks symptoms of complex trauma. And so, it's taken me a while to realize that and to realize little triggers can cause me to, that my mood might be at one place and then I have a trigger and I say a little trigger, but it's not a legal little one because the little one triggers you back to much bigger things. And so, I think that that's been a journey for me to continue to work on. They have that thing of starting your day over anytime with addiction. They talk about you can start it over. And I think that that's, a really simple thing, but yet something that's profound that we need to do with complex trauma is, realize that our moods are going to be dysregulated throughout the day and that we can work on, having tools to regulate them.
Yes, definitely. I hear you. And I've mentioned this before on the podcast, and I'll mention it again. But I never even knew what safety felt like or what it was. I knew it in my mind. I've heard descriptions, I can think about it, but the actual felt sense, I didn't know what it was. But I do now because I've had enough repetitive experiences. Yeah. And
And being around, being around safe people
yeah.
that help to co-regulate, and I talk
Yeah.
about that in the book.
Yeah.
I knew safety. It's interesting. When I went to a psychiatrist when I was at NYU, studying for my master's, I went to a psychiatrist and he gave me, 3 or 4 prescriptions, and that provided safety for me. And the more I took, the safer I felt. It didn't work in the long run, and obviously at 55 I ended up in rehab, so I'm not recommending that, but I am saying, that it makes a lot of sense that, I never felt safety in my system, and then you get medication and it calms you down and it's like, this is wonderful.
I can relate to that. I remember taking something and feeling like, oh, all the symptoms are gone. This is lovely. Can I live on this? Of course, I couldn't, but that was like an experience of not having all the activation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but there are ways that we can have experiences where we don't have activation. I mean, we know that 5 minutes of just looking at nature or being in nature, and even watching it on a screen for 5 minutes starts to help you feel more regulated and more embodied and more at peace. So nature is a really good one. I mean, there's a lot of different tools that can help us to just come back to regulation, come back into our bodies, come back into the now.
Yeah, I think for me in this journey, and I talk about it a little bit in the book, but I've expanded on it even since I've written the book, just ways to self-soothe, ways to bring about self-care in my body. I've been through a lot of treatment. When I got out of rehab, I started IOP and I went to IOP for a year. I was going three times a year,
What is that?
or
Could you?
intensive outpatient
Oh, okay.
therapy. So it was group therapy that I went to for a year, 3 times a week. And then at the same time, I went to individual counseling with a counselor that was very knowledgeable about trauma. And that was the beginning of me just like talking about little things that happened. But it was a building block for me.
Yes.
From there, I talk about going into a ministry with Pure Desire Ministries with a counselor by the name of Harry Flanagan. And he was really trauma informed, and he, really brought self-care to the forefront. And while we were doing things, he had said to me, I would like you to write down the traumas that you've had on a Word document. That was really hard to do. And I did it because I was determined. But, as I was doing it, Monique, a lot of other memories came up. So while I was doing that, I did a lot of brain spotting, a technique of mindfulness that was really, really helpful to help me to regulate. And from there, I was in groups and things like that. And then I, just recently started some internal family systems work. And with all of that, going back to the idea of self-care, things like every morning I get a hot bath that relaxes my body, just practical things. I go to my office and I do a lot of meditative things. I do a lot of coloring. I've gotten really good at coloring. just things that help my body to relax and kind of get to that green zone, as opposed to getting into, being in the red zone or the blue zone, just moving into that window of tolerance that is so important for us. You know, walking, I usually try to walk at least a mile a day. So
So
tools
good.
that help us, I play with putty, to help relax that good old limbic system that is always, scanning for danger, because that's what it's used to doing, because that's what it did my whole life.
Exactly.
You know, so that for me has been a really exciting part of this journey, to be able to find very practical things that I can reach for journaling. Journaling has been really, really helpful to me. Also drawing, just drawing pictures. I'm not an artist, but just drawing pictures of the trauma has been really, really helpful in helping me to process it. Looking at all of these different things, these different avenues that I never knew about. You know, I didn't get those in my training, because, trauma wasn't something that was talked about when I went into training. You know, the field is so open now with so many really good, really methodologies. I would have never believed, Monique, that I'd be sitting here talking to you, or writing the book and writing about the things that happened and being able to stay regulated, somewhat regulated, which is
Yes. That's amazing. And it's an amazing thing that you did. Because one of the things I feel with trauma is that I mean, I remember feeling like, this the horrific things happened and now I'm adult. And it was like a part of me was like, but like, and I'm like pointing, but because like it's over, but it's not over, and we didn't there was no acknowledgement. There was a, and this writing the book that you did is I just think I again I can't even put words to it, but you it was like you took all of those things that weren't mentioned that were it and you brought it to the front, and it was like a gift to yourself that hey, we're looking at this and I'm giving it to the world so that it can help other people look at it and find.
And that idea of one of the things I talk about in the book is the past. Like you said, the past is not the past when it shows up in the present. You know, and so these things happened to us years ago, but that's our bodies are still processing it today. And so, I talk about a story. I don't know if I talked about this in the book. There's two stories that I wanted to share with you quickly. One
Yes.
is, my dad had forced me to eat carrots, and as a result of that, I ended up throwing up, and then he threw me in the garbage. You know, so that was a really hard story. Fast forward, and I tell that difficult story to let people know, even if they're triggered right now, they can work through it. Things like that, So 28 years of age, I'm sitting at a wedding with Debbie, and they give us a plate, and on that plate is carrots, and I don't even think about it, but I take a bite of the carrot and I begin to gag immediately. So, that idea of the past is not the past with trauma. It's in the body. You know, maybe a little bit easier story, but it still was really hard for me, is when I was growing up, when my dad would get home, the garage door would go up. And as the garage door went up, my body would tighten up, because in my mind, it meant danger for me. And so fast forward, Debbie and I get in our first house where we have electric garage door openers. And so Debbie comes home from school and opens the garage door, and my body tightens. And I had no idea, and I felt bad. Like, why should I be so uptight about Debbie coming home? It didn't have anything to do with Debbie. It had to do with the earlier trigger that I needed to process. And still, at times when the garage door goes up, my body and my shoulders go up, and I have to remind myself and then do the reprocessing and renewing my mind and reminding myself that I'm not that little kid anymore.
I love everything that you're saying because it is just giving all of us an example of that is exactly how trauma shows up. I used to get the same thing when I would drive up to my house. I'd start to get like a panicky feeling, even though my house has no, adult house has no, nothing to feel anxious about. But it was those times that got kind of sealed in there. So I love that. One of the things that I have found really helpful, Mark, and maybe the listeners could this could benefit them, I hope, is I have put little, because we're very used to looking for cues of danger and then getting activated, I put around my home cues of safety, because that will trigger the opposite. It will, you know, it will deactivate, it will calm. And I've got things like, I'll show you right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I love the word cozy. No kidding. And so I've got this, you could see from my office, it's pink. That sounds
yes.
a little girlish, but that is what I love. I've got pink all over my office, and this thing that says stay cozy. Well, I look at that and immediately I feel cozy. So it's just little things like that, that we can do for ourselves. Talk about, you know, self-care is helping us, helping our environment, so that we can create a place that's like, okay, this house, this place, this environment is not the same. Look, 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 you know, helping ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had written down questions, and it's like we got talking, and I don't
That's
think
okay.
I asked you, but like, okay, just, you know, I'm going to ask you, because I think this is always helpful. Mark, can you talk about PTSD versus complex trauma? I still think people might like to know, what is the difference? Is there a difference between post-traumatic stress disorder and complex trauma?
The way I explain it is not a clinical way, and it's not a scientific way, but it's a way that I think it helps clients to understand that have gone through complex PTSD. With PTSD, usually there is a single incident or a couple incidents, and I talk to them about imagine holding a plate, like a dinner plate, and putting one pancake or two pancakes on that and holding that. And then for people with complex PTSD, I ask them to, you know, take the other hand and take a dinner plate, and then picture a whole stack of pancakes, one incident after another, and just pile them up, you know, one on top of the other. And I think that's a good picture for people. You know, it's so overwhelming when people have had one traumatic incident after another, and that's not to negate the pain with PTSD. Both of them carry a lot of pain, you know, and I really think, for me, one of the hallmarks for complex PTSD, as I mentioned earlier, is that dysregulation, a hard time regulating your nervous system throughout the day because of being triggered so often.
Yeah, that was a really good explanation. I wouldn't have 20 pancakes. I would say complex trauma is like a million pancakes. No, think about it though. Like,
Yeah, if you read, you know, if you read the book, chapters 4, 5, and 6, there's quite a few pancakes, you know, because about the childhood trauma that I experienced.
That's it. And so it makes sense that there would be dysregulation, because you've got all these millions of pancakes since your brain was starting to develop. It's funny. I used to wonder, like, why is that person so calm? And I'm like, this is what I used
What's
to
the matter
say.
with what's the matter with them?
Well, yeah, but you know, this is the good thing about being trauma informed, is because when we understand and we see that there's nothing wrong with me, my body is working exactly as it should, according to, it's responding the way that it should normally, according to the environment and the experiences that I had.
Yeah, my history. If you look at my
exactly
history, your history, it makes total sense why we're where we are today in 2023.
Exactly, exactly. Oh, so good. And, you know, I still have people today telling me that they listen to the podcast and they now understand what's going on with them. They're understanding about complex trauma. And for that, I'm so happy, because when in my time, when I was trying to get help, they just understood PTSD. And I did not see childhood trauma. Nope. That's not it. And so where do you fit? Oh, you're anxious, or oh, you're a nervous type, you know?
Yeah, when I went originally to a psychiatrist, and he was very good, and, you know, he went according to the training of that time, you know, he said, you have major depressive disorder, you have anxiety with panic attacks, and you probably have ADHD, and I got medicated accordingly.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I'm glad things are changing, and, you know, that's really hopeful. So, is there anything else you want to say before we close, that you feel you'd like to say?
You know, I wrote the book to talk about somebody who really had a lot of trauma, who really fell and really struggled with living according to their values. And so I wanted to write the book to say, you know, no matter how much you've struggled, how far you've fallen, how many times you've relapsed, whatever your story is, you know, you can get back up by the grace of God. And, you know, it's important for you to surround yourself with safe people. It's important for you to get treatment. I'm a big proponent, not because I'm a therapist, but also because I've gone through so much treatment and I'm in treatment now myself. So I don't think, you know, I don't think that addiction owns my story. I don't think that trauma owns my story. I don't think that my childhood owns my story. And so for me, spiritually, it's really important for me to hold to that and to realize that you know, that it has been a real spiritual journey for me. And people can read that in the book that, you know, it's not easy, but it's definitely worth it. And don't give up. Don't give up. I don't care how much you're struggling, don't give up.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Thank you. So if people want to get your book, it's available on Amazon, right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, I will put the link in the show notes, and I'll also put the link to your website, but you can mention it here too. How can people, if they want to find out more about your work, how can they
Yeah,
find you?
they can go on Google and just put in Mark McNair, MarkMcNear.com, and there's a spot there to contact me, and they can contact me and I will answer their emails.
Oh, lovely. All right. Well, thank you, Mark. I really enjoyed speaking with you. It feels like you're a fellow, a brother. You get it. So loved it. Loved
Thank you,
it.
Monique. This has been awesome.
And I wish you well on your continued healing journey. And yeah, take care.
Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.